Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome, it's Ewan Spence here, back from Austin and South by Southwest for your All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. Rafe should be at the other end of the line. Rafe!
Yes, I'm here. Hello, everybody. I know it's been a while since we did the last podcast, just over a fortnight, but with Ewan in South by, it was a bit tricky to get things arranged. And Ewan, was that a Texas accent you were trying to get across there by any chance?
I've been in America long enough to go, I'll take the fifth on that one.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, and by to my issues at South by, you mean my hotel didn't have enough bandwidth to punch a voice signal through?
Yes, it was always the way there. I mean, you got however many, 30,000 delegates, I think it is. It seems like Austin doesn't quite have the bandwidth, and also linking up with the time zone difference. But we've had a lot of news in the last 2 weeks, haven't we, Ewan?
We have, yes. Strangely enough, none of it announcing a new phone, which seems kind of weird because there's been a good steady stream of devices since the start of the year. But that's okay because we've been taking time with the phones that we do have to get to know them a little bit better. But it's an interesting state of play, Rafe, that it actually feels... There is more news, but it's more app-based, and that's actually a good thing for the platform.
That's right. You know, I guess we're still digesting the two new devices from NWC, and before that we were kind of talking about the 620, and I think we're going to end up doing more of that. But there's been quite a few high-profile app announcements in the last few weeks, and also some stuff around the platform. In terms of devices, you know, people have sort of started talking about a new Lumia device on Verizon, potentially the Lumia 928. There's nothing official on that yet. I was kind of expecting maybe an announcement at South by, but we didn't get anything there. I suspect it'll arrive a bit later in the year, and I noticed Stephen Enoch's been giving some interviews and dropping some hints about a gorgeous device, and people have been getting excited about that. It's not really news. I can tell you there's always new devices on the way, but I don't actually think that's a bad thing, because the current lineup, which we talked about being complete, is pretty interesting. And I think particularly the 720 and the 520, which got announced at MWC, we haven't really had an opportunity to go into much detail, but we're expecting to get those in for review before too long. So we'll be taking a much deeper dive on those in due course.
Indeed, yes. We shall be looking at the handsets here on the podcast, also back on the website as well, through my delightful video diaries. Delightful, of course, is a subjective term. But Rafe, I want to ask you a couple of things about the applications that have come out while I was in Texas. And I want to start off with this 2Insta with Love. This seems quite an aggressive play from Nokia. It's essentially a Nokia app that allows you to post a picture, and at the same time it leaves a little thread on Twitter and Facebook with a hashtag to let Instagram know people would like an Instagram application on their Nokia Lumia handsets. So I have a question for you, and it's a two-part question. Is this Nokia trying to court Instagram very, very heavily? Or is this Nokia have already courted Instagram very, very heavily and are just preparing the grounds for a really good PR launch of the application?
That's a very good question. I mean, when I first wrote about this, I kind of said, you know, you can look at it from two points of view, and that's it exactly. I think the more cynical might suggest that it's all part of some big marketing campaign. I think at least from the Nokia point of view, that probably isn't the case. I don't doubt that they've talked to Instagram. I mean, my understanding of the situation before this happened was that Microsoft had been kind of the ones that had been courting Instagram, and they'd certainly been talking about it, and they'd offered to do what they've done in a couple of other instances and actually effectively write the app for them, or at least underwrite the cost so that there were no assets from Instagram being involved. But of course, that still needs to be signed off by Instagram, and they've proved pretty reluctant to kind of have that third-party interaction. I mean, the Instagram API doesn't allow you to post photos. This is why there's no kind of third-party Instagram apps that allow you to post photos. All the third-party ones are just about viewing. And obviously, you know, being able to post and being part of the community is kind of the big thing with Instagram. It's not really about, you know, applying filters, although that's obviously part of it. It's really the community side of it. It's, you know, a photo social network, and that's why it's popular. So for me, at least, I think it's about Nokia trying to kind of prove to Instagram that there is a lot of interest in getting it onto Windows Phone, you know, 2Insta with Love, the hashtag that's being used on Twitter and Facebook. You know, they can monitor that, see how many countries. I mean, I noticed that one of the Nokia executives who's kind of works on this developer side of things, said that they'd had, you know, people from more than 100 countries using this, and that was just a few days after it was released. They then released it to all Windows Phone, not just Nokia ones. So to me, it feels very much like kind of they probably sat down and had a conversation. Instagram had gone, it's still not really worth our while. Kind of, can you prove it to us? And Nokia gone, well, we're selling this many handsets. And Instagram gone, still not really interested. Do you really think you have an engaged community? And so by releasing this app and giving it a bit of, you know, air, if you like, they can go to Instagram, kind of look at all of this interest. And this is just from an app that's, you know, a single field. And to be honest, you're only going to get the most passionate, engaged users download and do something with this. And they do seem to have got, you know, a pretty meaty response out of it. From the Instagram side of things, I'm sure they're still looking at Windows Phone and going, does that really have the install base to kind of justify doing an app? Honestly, from a business point of view, I can't really understand why they wouldn't at this point, because, you know, Windows Phone does get talked about a lot. They're going to get lots of exposure when they, you know, do go ahead and do it without it really costing them anything. But, you know, you can't really understand the thinking either side. So I do tend to take the less cynical view here and say that it's kind of Nokia trying to demonstrate that there is interest. But make no mistake, there's certainly discussions going on right now and have been going on for a while. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if there's even a prototype app out there. You know, whether it gets released is more down to a business decision on the part of Instagram than anything else, I feel.
Indeed, yes. And if James Watley is listening, I saw what you did, you sneaky little so-and-so. Don't do it again. Right then, speaking of the other signature applications, Pandora is a big one in America. Essentially, it's Spotify in America. And I know people are going to go, that's terrible. But one of the big talking points at South by Southwest, certainly the music side of things, was how Pandora drives everything and Spotify doesn't have any sort of install base in the US side of things. And it's completely the opposite over here. Spotify has a huge install base and Pandora is not over here. It's another option built around music. And Rafe, I know you're kind of going, but we have Nokia Music and Nokia Music Plus and everything. But again, this is one of those names where people can go into a store and go, does this handset have Instagram? Does it have Pandora? Does it have Spotify? Does it have Angry Birds Empire Strikes Back Return of the Slayer or something? This is actually a really important name.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I know when when Microsoft were originally looking at Windows Phone, they, you know, kind of drew up a list of the top 100 apps that they really needed to get on the platform. And of those, Angry Birds and Pandora were the two that they didn't get. And there's actually some history around Microsoft saying, and we're going to get Pandora, and Pandora going, no, you're not, we don't know anything about this. But it has now finally arrived. It's probably worth explaining for our kind of European listeners or outside of America. It's effectively a streaming radio service that, you know, plays music. You don't get, like with the premium Spotify version, you know, a la carte and choose track by track. You know, you are having your music selections made for you in the style of Nokia Music. I think one of the interesting things about this, though, is Microsoft and Pandora clearly have worked quite closely together. And I think the way they describe it is you've got the best mobile Pandora experience on Windows Phone. That's for a couple of reasons. Microsoft are kind of subsidizing some of the subscription costs for Windows Phone users, so it will be completely ad-free for the rest of the year, so until 2013, or the end of 2013. By the same token, there's going to be no limits on the number of hours you can play. On the free accounts, you're usually limited to 40 hours. And if you want to have ad-free, you normally have to pay $3.99 or $36 a month. So, you know, actually you're getting a pretty nice exclusive there, pretty nice offering of music if you're in the States. To my mind, if you're just doing a direct comparison, Nokia Music is probably better. You know, you get the offline support. You can potentially pay the subscription and get, you know, unlimited offloads. And of course, there's no ads at all on whatever level of Nokia Music you're on. But you're right, this is kind of about a big brand, big recognition. And Pandora has some 54 million plus users. That was back in July of last year, so you can assume it's well over 60, maybe even 65 million now. So it's kind of about that recognition. As you said, people go, oh, I'm not going to have a Windows Phone device because it doesn't have Pandora, it doesn't have Instagram. You know, there's one less on that list. And, you know, there's newer apps coming all the time. I mean, United Airlines was another one that was released in the last week. There's been some big games titles as well from Gameloft, and, you know, there's been an update to Skype. There's been kind of the first of the, you know, graphic engines are really starting to get going on the gaming side. And so the more gaps that are filled, there's kind of less, oh, I'm not going to get a Windows Home because of X or Y. And I guess Pandora is probably one of the highest profile ones we've had in that sense this year.
And what it also does is to other developers looking in at Windows Phone, when they see those names are turning up, it's a case of, oh, Windows Phone must be ready now, but I'm still not quite ready, which is why I find Microsoft's move to the US developer community rather interesting. This is $100 for every application that goes up into the Windows Phone store, also the Windows 8 store as well. Up to a maximum of like 10,000 entries, and you're only allowed to have a maximum of 20 applications or so. But again, that's about how much the annual subscription is to the dev kit, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you pay $100 and you kind of get your entry into this developer portal where you can submit apps. As you say, you can do up to 20 apps. So potentially you could earn $2,000. That's been a lot of attention around this, particularly because it includes Windows 8 apps as well. It's one of the first times that Microsoft's actually incentivized directly the creation of Windows 8 apps. And, you know, the incentivization of Windows Phone apps is kind of more usual. There's been various programs, both from Microsoft, but also from some of their partners like Nokia and some of the other handset manufacturers. So, you know, I guess it's less of interest there. I think the pricing here is interesting. I mean, they're basically offering a $100 app bonus. That's obviously not going to fund the development of any app. What it may do is cause someone to go, oh, I'm just going to put an app together in my spare time and see what I come up with. And there are various rules about, you can't just have cloned apps and things like that. But at that kind of level, I mean, even if they get a full take up of this, it's going to cost them, $1 million, which is not quite a rounding error in the marketing budgets, but it's not that big a deal. It's not a major investment. So I think it's very obviously aimed at increasing the number of apps. I mean, you might call it the long tail of apps, or sometimes these are called the zombie apps, the ones that, sit in the marketplace making up the numbers but get very few downloads because they sit at the bottom of category lists or the bottom of search results and people don't scroll down to them. But they do seem to be kind of essential if you're going to play this game where you compare App Store metrics in terms of the size of the catalogue. And just by just saying over and over again, it's about quantity, not it's about quality, not quantity, not the other way around. That still is used as a kind of a ballpark metric all the time for why Windows Phone is behind. So this is just going to give it a little bit of a boost, and it might be especially relevant because, there's a lot of noise being made around BlackBerry going over 100,000 apps. So they're certainly, catching up. The last number Microsoft talked about was 130,000. It is a little bit over that now, according to our own numbers. So yeah, I don't think you can actually read too much into this, and people get excited about what does this say about the health of the App Store. To me, at least, it's just about increasing that catalog size number. A more interesting question should be whether Microsoft should be doing this kind of thing rather than trying to move the goalposts, if you like, so such that the quality metric becomes more important than this quantity metric. But in all fairness to Microsoft, I don't think they can do that on their own. So they're going to have to try and do both, which means for me at least, these kind of incentive programs are inevitable, especially for the ecosystems that are kind of playing, catch up to Android and iOS. Just because they haven't been around as long, of course they're going to have less in it. But while people still talk about these numbers and we talk about how much is enough, is it 100,000, 200,000? I've always thought it was around the 100,000 figure, but maybe you can increase that a little bit. So a bit of a storm in a teacup for me, people getting excited about this. For me, it's just trying to increase the number of zombie apps, which I can't say I entirely approve of, but I can understand absolutely why it's happening.
Well, let me take it another way. But before I do that, just very briefly, that BlackBerry number, about 40% of those applications are just Android apps that have just got a skin on top of them.
But that doesn't matter. This is, that's the same of this $100 incentive.
Indeed,
people
yes.
don't see the context. And just as they won't see the context with these $100, even if they're all, and honestly, I don't expect any app to be created as a result of this $100 bonus that wouldn't have otherwise been that is good and people want to download. It is going to be, as I say, these zombie apps, which is a shame. Having said that, it might get someone interested in developing, yeah. might hook them in, but
but if you have 100,000 applications 10,000 applications, I would expect 100 of them to be quality applications that do something, whether it be a really good stopwatch or whatever. And then out of that 100, I think 10 of them would be very good quality, the sort of things that you could feature at the front of the showcase. And there is a chance that one of those will actually be a bit of a stonker of an application. So when you turn around and see Microsoft's budget, they've basically put $1 million bet down on getting 10 good applications out of this. And I actually think that's a pretty good return.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like I said, I'm a little bit skeptical whether, you know, anyone would really go ahead and do it, you know, because of this $100 incentive. On the other hand, if it is that encouragement for someone to, you know, just work a little bit harder on it, getting out a few months early, by the same token, you know, it's a decent return on the investment. And so, you know, as I said, I think these programs are inevitable, and it's easy to be cynical about and say it's just a waste of time. But I think you're right. You know, there is always a good chance that you'll get something really worthwhile out of it. And it's quite difficult to predict what they'll be. You know, often the most popular apps are something really simple. I mean, in the past, you know, people joke about fart apps or something like that, but they got lots of attention. Now, I'm not proposing that we get something like that, but you could get some, you know, almost throwaway disposable app that suddenly goes, oh, that's a great idea. And if someone thinks, oh, I'm going to implement it on Windows Phone because of this bounty, well, that's going to be to the benefit of the platform.
But we might not want fart applications, but a Brian Blessed application would be very much appreciated.
Well, there we go. I mean, we've talked about this quite a bit now, which kind of goes against my just ignore it. These things are just going to happen anyway. But it's kind of interesting that it did attract a lot of attention, and it was kind of mainly negative. I thought, you know, this kind of thing is going on all the time, and it's kind of this app rush mentality that's still going on. And as I said, I don't think there's any way to avoid it, particularly, you know, as I say, for these ecosystems battling for third place. And it's no different to, you know, what BlackBerry was doing. I mean, they actually offered more generous terms to developers in many ways.
They were like $1,000. If you make $1,000, you'll get a $1,000 bonus on top of it, I think it was.
Yeah. And, you know, they were also encouraging, you know, this push to convert across Android apps. You know, so I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, the only difficulty with this, of course, if you get too much junk in the App Store, it then affects overall quality. Having said that, you know, these app stores are set up such that the kind of the top 100, top 1,000 apps are the one that gets displayed most. So that's what most people will see. And you will see these breakdowns of, you know, there's this much junk in the app store. But, you know, you go and look at iOS and Android, you'll find exactly the same thing there. You know, is this going to have a major impact on the proportion of those zombie apps? No, not really. You know, as I say, I kind of think it's probably not worth discussing in too much detail.
Okay, well, I'll leave it with one final question then. Do you think the BBC are going to claim their $100 when they release the iPlayer app?
Well, no, they're not, because this is only open to...
It's our license fee money. It's $100 they can get back.
It's only open to US developers. Sadly, the UK-based BBC won't be able to claim. But what
BBC Worldwide could do it. Oh, but then it's iPlayer Worldwide, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, right then.
What Ewan's referring to here is actually another high-profile app that's particularly of interest to UK users. Actually, another one that came in just the other day is Auto Trader, kind of the car marketplace magazine straight website. So that was another high-profile app, and that's actually a really good one. So if you want to have a look at a good app, that's another good one to download. But yes, BBC iPlayer is going to be arriving on Windows Phone before too long. It's actually essentially going to take the form of just a shortcut to their iPlayer website, and they're going to be changing kind of the device recognition stuff, and so it'll be able to download and then stream the episodes. It's not going to be download and then play. It's going to be entirely streaming based as we understand it. But that means you'll be able to do catch-up TV on the main BBC channels, also for radio as well. It's a high-profile app for the UK. I mean, I would say it's kind of equivalent or perhaps even more high-profile than Pandora is in the States, because, you know, BBC iPlayer is very, very popular as a catch-up service in the UK. And depending on who you ask, it takes up a significant amount of the UK's internet bandwidth. I've seen estimates anywhere from 10 up to about 40%, but certainly it's one of those things that I think in the UK, at least, you know, people do ask, you know, does it have BBC iPlayer on it? All of these questions about does it have app X and Y, you know, it's easy to get bogged down. No one's going to buy the device because it doesn't have X. Actually, it's only small percentage of people that ask this question, but it all, you know, plays into the perception game, I guess. And so yes, it's a high profile one, so it's not actually available yet. But we will let you know when it is.
Indeed, yes. Right, things that are available, though, Xbox Live titles. Wow. Gameloft swinging into the rescue. It's like, we've had a decent release schedule over the last couple weeks. Spider-Man just as I left, Batman and Shark Dash coming up, a couple more promised. We had Asphalt 7 coming back in there. Gameloft bringing over some very big name titles. Admittedly, these are titles that have already had a very good run on iOS and Android in terms of release dates and everything. But again, it's nice to see that we're back to that regular Wednesday schedule of something comes out Wednesday sort of afternoon when we post it up in Seattle. And so again, the perception is back again of you will get a new high quality game on a Wednesday night. And I like that.
Yeah, it's interesting this one because these Game Loft titles, as you say, have been poured across, but they're also, you know, what I would call near console quality in terms of the graphics. It's really showing off the new graphics capability that's in Windows Phone 8, and that's possible because of the support for native code, and you're able to do your own game engine. It's much easier to port across the code, and it's taken a while for this to kind of, you know, kick in, if you like. But you know, Spider-Man's a good example. It's kind of this open 3D world. You can explore Manhattan while following a rough storyline based on last year's film. The frame rate isn't too great. It's actually, you know, bears something in common with the same game on other platforms there, you know, really pushing at the edge here. But it is a high profile title, and you know, it is very, very impressive compared to what you had on the Windows Phone 7.5 games. But it's not just these Xbox Live titles either. I mean, it's great to see these coming out, and there's actually more to come from Gameloft. But there was Drift Mania Championship 2. That's a racing game. It's the first one powered by the Unity engine. Again, that had pretty good graphics. That one took had a bit more of a learning curve. I tried it out. It took me a while to kind of get the hang of it, but so I could get onto the next levels. But it wasn't just that. There was another one that kind of caught her eye, which was 3D Fighter Brotherhood of Violence. Not my sort of game personally, but it was interesting because it was released at the same time as the Windows 8 and the iOS version, and actually Android and macOS are going to come a bit behind. You know, we've got so used to having the titles on Windows Phone come out a bit later, you know, Angry Birds being the classic example, but some of those Game Loft titles as well. I wouldn't get too excited about it being, oh, suddenly developers have gone, oh, we've got to get on Windows Phone at the same time as everything else. This has really happened because it's sharing, you know, code with desktop Windows and also with other platform titles. So it makes it a lot easier to release these titles at the same time.
Essentially, and what's happened is the code is now part of their workflow in their first build of the application. The little module that builds iOS, the little module that builds Android, the little module that builds Windows Phone can be added on, and it's relatively invisible to the actual developer.
That's right. I mean, it is obviously a bit more complicated than that, and I'd actually say it's probably more, it's Windows full stop has been added to the workflow. And so, you know, you're releasing it on desktop Windows, and the tweak necessary to release it on Windows Phone is relatively minor. So I would expect this to happen more often. And it's, you know, due to something that's happened with Windows Phone 8, this introduction of kind of the common core with Windows, that's, you know, obviously part of it, but it's actually mainly around this native code and this support for gaming engines, which, as I say, it means it's much easier to port the code across. You don't have to do a special case for Windows Phone. And, you know, Windows Phone 8 sometimes gets criticized for not adding a lot of features, but an awful lot kind of changed under the hood, of which this native code and the game engine was a really important thing. And the common core, you know, it's not very obvious, but it's now having benefits that are really beginning to tell. So I expect to see a lot more of these high profile kind of near console quality games. You know, it's interesting, you know, graphics have become much more important on smartphone games in the last 5 years. You know, I remember playing the initial games and it was all around gameplay. It was, you know, very similar to the early days of, I guess, things like the Commodore and the Spectrum, where, you know, gameplay over graphics. And, you know, now we're kind of moving more towards console, like, where graphics become more important. You know, gameplay is still there, and that makes a good game great. But you're a regular gamer, you, and, you know, how important is having this kind of rich graphic experience important in a smartphone game?
I actually think it's very important because the immersive qualities of the smartphone have taken over from the traditional handheld market. Your Nintendos, your Sony PS Vitas of this world are great, but they're just not selling anymore. Everything is moving to smartphones. Your developers previously who would target those handheld platforms are now targeting the smartphones. And it's because of the volume of numbers. It's because of the ease of development. And this is where I think you're right in saying it's Windows all told that's been brought through into that developer environment. Because when you have something like Steam on the PC, a sort of equivalent of Xbox Live, a store and developer environment, and in-app purchasing and everything that's available on the PC. You want to replicate that, and you're kind of there with Xbox Live. It wouldn't actually surprise me if at some point in the near future we have Steam branch out into mobile. And when they do, you would hope that they would come to Windows Phone as well as Android and iOS. It's easier to sell, it's easier to monetize, and also there's the price of the games as well. If you go in to buy a leading PS Vita title, you're talking about £50, $60 nowadays. Whereas, you know, we're looking at the price of like The Amazing Spider-Man at $6.99, thinking that's quite high for a mobile phone game, but it will sell significantly more units. So it is very important that the graphics come through as well, because people expect good graphics in their games now. And they don't see that sort of distinction between the sort of screen based in their living room and the screen based that's in their hand. They're expecting to see the same sort of quality, because technology is now at the level where it's pretty much magic. They want it to look the same. So it's incredibly important, and that's why that native code support was important to get into Windows Phone 8. That's why seeing something like the Unity engine with Drift Racing that was released 2 weeks ago is one of the first games to use that, coming to Windows Phone as well as coming already being available on Android now, is very important as well. It creates common environments. It creates common code structures. It essentially makes the process and the workflow much, much easier for a developer. Angry Birds have to recode for Windows Phone 7. That's not the case with Windows Phone 8. They can repurpose code.
Yeah. So it's almost, I mean, is it fair to say it's almost, you know, you're getting an extra gaming experience in addition to kind of the traditional, if you like, the casual gaming on smartphones that we've had for a long time? You know, smartphones have converged one more thing in, and it's kind of the dedicated portable game system. And we hear a lot about Nintendo versus iOS in this kind of arena, but it does feel like, to me, almost an extra category of games. And it sort of seems to me that's where Xbox Live is going to specialize a lot in the future, but it needs to be careful not to lose sight of some of the, if you like, the more traditional casual gaming as well.
If you were to take a snapshot of it now, then yes, I would agree. But there have always been big licensed titles. There have always been titles that have tried to push the boundaries. Nokia's Pathway to Glory in the original N-Gage springs to mind. Rift's Promise of Power springs to mind. Interestingly, of course, Game Loft this week released both Batman The Dark Knight, very big, very in-depth, very complex open-world game, and Shark Dash, which is very much a casual game and sort of jump around, grab some ducks by being a shark, and there's only 90 levels and it'll take you about an hour. So I do think that they're smart enough to know that there are different types of games. And the price difference there, again, $6.99 for The Dark Knight, 99 cents for Shark Dash. You know, they both sell, they both make money, and they're both commensurate with the amount of effort that they're put in. So I think it's wrong to say there's a differentiator of casual and big title, because it is a gradient. But you also have a gradient in handsets. I mean, I'll jump very briefly into the Android world. You have your very basic ZTEs that you pick up in the store that can just about run a game of Bubble Pop. And then you go all the way up to something like the Ouya console, which I've actually seen and touched, that runs Android, full screen graphics, HDMI output, incredible gaming coming up on that console, and they're all running off the Android OS. So that gradient is there in every single platform. So yes, there's a big pile of casual, there's a big pile of big stuff, but there's an interesting space in the middle.
Yeah, my favorite phrase for describing this is a continuum, and it's always kind of satisfying to divide things into different categories, but the reality is, in most cases, as you say, it's one long line between two different points, and everything lies somewhere along that line. Just one other issue I want to bring up here. You know, there's lots of attention around these big game titles, and Game Loft have been getting a lot of attention. You know, what about the kind of the indie developers? Is there still space for them? I mean, this has been a big complaint with Xbox Live anyway, and sometimes they do get kind of promoted onto Xbox Live. In one sense, I kind of agree with a lot of the critics who say, you know, it's difficult for indie developers, and it is. But I think that's always going to be the case when you're a small team competing against the much larger teams. But I do want to, you know, kind of give a shout out to one indie developer in particular, and that's 10 Tons, who have been releasing a new Windows Phone game weekly. They're mainly exploiting some of their back catalogue and bringing it across, and I know they've got about 10 titles to bring across, and they're about halfway through that list. But there's been some, you know, really great games that they've brought across, and I know you've been playing a couple of them, Ewan.
Indeed, yeah, we've been playing 10 Ton games for some time now at the moment. Again, pretty sure 10 Tons are Finnish as well, so they go along with people like Rovio and Red Links as well. And again, this is where it's important. This is an indie developer who takes very basic game concepts, the Match 3, the Bejeweled Cell Clone, and sort of reconceptualizes them, puts them back together again. It's like taking apart a car engine or a washing machine, putting it back together again and realizing that you've got 5 screws left over, but the washing machine still works. So what they've done is, let's take the one I've just reviewed, Dragon Portals. Essentially, that's a Match 3 game, but you can only push tiles down. You can't swap tiles over. And you can only do it in, rather than gravity dropping down, it's lines going along. It's essentially the same game, but they've taken it apart, they've put it back together again. They've forgotten the bit that says you could swap tiles from side to side, or that you have things dropping down from the top, like your bag of bolts in the washing machine, but it still works. And it's still a great game, but it just puts a gamer just enough off kilter that they have to learn again. I'm really enjoying that. Here is the Kalevala, which I remember reviewing on Symbian. Again, standard sort of Bejeweled clone, but you've got extra blocks underneath, so you have to match tiles over something 3 times maybe to break it. And again, they have a fresh look at games. Yeah. 10 Tons, which is what they've done throughout the range of stuff. It's great to see the back catalogue coming. What's going to be greater still is to see what happens after they finish the back catalogue releases. Because I guess they've just went, you know, we reckon we've got the back catalogue and we'll sell that many. We've got enough engineering time to do it. It's, have they done enough sales? Have they got enough confidence? Have they got enough resources to do new stuff on Windows Phone again at the same time as iOS and Android? Fingers crossed.
And again, the reason they're coming across now is because of this native code support that we're talking about. I mean, they've got Boomba Gray 2, that's kind of a tower defense take. Sparkle, that's sort of firing bubbles and having bubbles disappear when they're in a long line. I can't remember the original game that did that. I'm sure someone will write in and tell us. And kind of King Oddball, which is a weird kind of angry bird stroke catapult mix up or mash up. And one of the things I like about 10 Tons is there's quite a lot of humor sometimes in their games, and they certainly come up with some wacky ideas. But that's kind of the, you know, comes back to the question I was asking about indie games. I think if they're high enough quality, they will get noticed and they will get picked up by, you know, players. They'll rise up the rankings in the store. You know, obviously you can do things to help that, but, you know, having a well-crafted, a quality game, which I think 10 Tons is a great example of, you know, the attention to detail, teaching you how to play the game, kind of the right settings, high quality music and graphics. You know, it's not necessarily, you know, a Spider-Man Game Loft type game, but really interesting. So we're going to keep an eye on them, because I know there's a few more titles to come as well.
Indeed, yes. We'll probably pick up some of them for review. If not, we'll have them in the flow on the website, www.allaboutwindowsphone.com. You're always welcome to leave your comments, and we've got submissions. If you have tips as well, you can pop them in by email, you can Twitter them to us, and I'm sure we've got a carrier pigeon that will come out and pick up your messages as well, Rafe, haven't we?
Yes, you, and I'm sure I can find a carrier pigeon from somewhere, maybe in the loft. Anyway, moving on from apps, I guess we'll talk about a bit more at the end of the show. You've been at South by Southwest, as we all know. We gave you a Lumia 620 to take with you. Harsh environment, you know, lots of connectivity issues, you know, you're abroad, but also lots of people trying to use, so you know, you're trying to do stuff, you're out all day, so battery life, a bit of an issue. 620, it's a mid-tier Lumia handset, so kind of, how did you get on with it? What were the high points and the low points?
I think the high point is when you get to the end of the day and it's still running, and you realise that it's done pretty much everything that you asked it to do. The 620, again, it is a mid-tier, and so it's got a slightly slower processor, it's got a slightly smaller screen, 3.8 inches, but at the same time, that means that even though it's got a smaller battery, everything is in a nice ratio. It's got it got to the end of the day, and I'm emailing, I'm doing web browsing checking, I'm taking pictures with the phone. Yes, I have clipped the battery saver mode on, which means it's not constantly pulling my email and stuff. But then again, I'm doing that manually. I'm calling up and pressing the refresh button as it goes along. So, and I was probably doing that more than once every 30 minutes. And when I look at my 820, I leave that on just pull every 30 minutes. So to me, it's not that much of a difference. But what it did do is it put me more in control of when I was using the limited bandwidth that I had on my AT&T prepaid card, because I think I got about a gig of traffic. For those of you keeping track, over the 10 days, I think I did about 400 to 500 gig of data. So it would just about have made the month as well. I think the surprising thing for me...
I'm just going to interrupt you in that, and just to reassure users, that was 400 to 500 megabytes, not 400 to 500 gigabytes that Ewan was down.
Did I say gig? I did. You know, give it 2 years, yeah, and it probably will be. By the time you chuck HD video and everything around. Actually, speaking of HD video, do you know the most surprising thing about the 620? It's got the same microphone pickups as you have on the 820 and 920, which means recording live music over video, the audio quality is fantastic.
So this was the high amplitude microphones, and the reason these work is basically because they can effectively sample the sound at a higher decibel volume and you get a more accurate recording, and it really comes into its own in loud environments, and presumably, you know, some of the gigs at the music festival, that's where you're able to try it out.
Some of the gigs might be quite loud. Oh, yes, most definitely. The video is then kind of let down by the camera lens. It's not a Carl Zeiss. It's just your Nokia lens with a plastic cover on it. But again, it's a sort of mid-to-budget tier phone. So about, what's 150 off contract, and probably available free in a pay-as-you-go if you look around hard enough. You know, I think the camera quality was more than acceptable. When there was good light, when he was in daylight, the pictures were perfectly good. When you start taking it into a dark, dingy pub and everything and start shooting HD video at midnight, then it starts to sort of show itself up. The colors start to merge together. It just becomes just white blotches in the background. But again, you know, the expectations that you have when you pick up a 620 are different to the expectations, say, with a 920, for example. If the 920 output a video of the quality I got, it would be rubbish. It might have been actually interesting to bring a 920 along to actually put it into one of those dark environments to see what's going on. But, you know, most people going into the store can't pick up a whole bundle of phones and take them away and test them. They're going to go in, they're going to know what price of phone they want, they're going to pick it up. And if they pick up the 620, I think they're going to pick up a very competent smartphone. I still rankle over the whole backup issue thing of Windows Phone 8, actually. I still would like them to fix that so I can back up a device, have it swapped out, and then restore it, and the device is the same. I don't think that's too much to ask for, because this is almost a disposable phone. You know, it's not one that I was worrying about in a gig. If I'd had the 920, I'd be going, oh, it's an expensive phone, I've got to be careful with it, I've got to put it back in a case and everything. With the 620, it was just chucked into the sporran.
Yeah, what Ewan's talking about here is the fact that if you use more than one device, you basically have to set them up as completely independent devices. You do get, obviously, some commonalities with, you know, things coming into the People Hub from the various accounts, and also things like SkyDrive, but it's, you know, copying apps across, and particularly when on other devices, you can do that, you know, very immediate transfer, you know, from one device to the other. I mean, it's perhaps, you know, more of an edge case when you're having more than one device going at the time, but it does apply to...
I don't think it's the edge case here. I think it's also the case of if the phone was lost.
Well, I was going to say, it's not really about, you know, keeping two devices on the go at the same time. Yeah. It's when people are moving from one device to another, which might well be happening with, you know, Windows Phone 7.5 to Windows 8, or as you say, when people lose a device. Now, in fairness to Microsoft, there is a certain amount of backup and restore that will work to restore all your apps, although you then do have to go through them kind of manually on the app launcher and kind of install them. But that doesn't really apply to all the data and some of the other setup and bits and pieces, so it's very much a halfway house at the moment. Just to come back to something you said on price, Ewan, you said £150, that's on sort of pay as you go. Actually, in the UK, it's just gone down to £130 for a special offer with O2. You will get it free on a contract, but I don't think you'll get it free on pay as you go just at the moment.
Fair enough, then. I'm sorry for overselling the phone. the problem with the halfway house of backup, right, we've touched it before, but I will rant briefly about it again, is I would rather have nothing than we will restore your list of applications, because it doesn't restore game data, it doesn't restore save files. Okay, there are a couple of Microsoft things that go up into the cloud, such as the bookmarks from your web browser, but it won't remember anything. I think when people see the words backup and restore on a mobile device, they expect what they get with, for example, with iOS and Apple devices. They back up the device, it says backed up. If they restore it to a replacement device, it will be in exactly the same condition as when they pressed backup. You can't do that on Windows Phone, and when you're down at this sort of range where phones are going to be taking a lot of punishment, they could easily get smashed, dropped, dunked in a pint for anything like that, and just getting switched out from your handset manufacturer or from your network. and you press restore and you go, you know what, we've copied over the applications you have, but you're going to have to go back to level one of Angry Birds.
Yeah, no, I think it's a particular issue with app data, with game saves, that, you know, you feel it more than other places. But this does apply to other apps as well. You know, if you've got an app that you're keeping your password list in, for example, actually quite a lot of those apps, you know, have backup to SkyDrive and you can restore from that. And I would encourage developers, you know, if you've got valuable data in your app, do some kind of SkyDrive, or it doesn't really matter what service, can be another cloud storage backup, so that users, if they are moving to another device for whatever reason, can easily get it back. And, you know, ideally that is a process that should happen sort of automatically, you know, maybe when you start or exit the app, you know, it's one of the things that should happen in the background. Clearly then, you know, needs to be some work on that at the platform level, but it's hard to get right. And in all fairness to Windows Phone, you know, I've seen this can be an issue on Android and iOS depending on how it's implemented. But I guess, you know, Microsoft would do well to kind of provide some kind of persistent storage that automatically went up to the cloud, and, you know, that's kind of already there, the persistent storage part, and then that kind of temporary storage, which doesn't matter. It just, I guess, it reflects sort of the maturity of Windows Phone. There are still some things that need fixing here. Okay, and one other thing I wanted to touch on, you know, which I think is been talked about as one of the strengths of Windows Phone, but let's see if it's borne out in reality. You know, you've used the higher end devices, you've got an 820, you've seen a 920, you've seen some of the other handsets as well. You know, was there anything in terms of kind of a function or a feature that you felt you couldn't do on the 620? Perhaps, you know, leaving aside differences from, you know, screen size or actually down to hardware, I'm talking about in the software, you know, you decide you want to use a certain app or use a certain feature of the platform. You know, were there any differences?
There was one major one, and it's actually probably quite an inconsequential one, which is I couldn't install some of those new Game Loft games because they required so much free space on the internal storage. I think it's like Batman needs 5 gig free, so it will actually install the 800 megabyte application. It's when we picked up the 620, we talked about this beforehand, and I decided to run it without a memory card in there because most people buying it in the stores wouldn't have a memory card in the retail packaging, so we wanted to replicate that. But even then, you know, applications all have to be stored in the internal drive, so those larger applications were just simply saying there's not enough room for us to install this application with. That's a bug at the moment that we're aware of, and we believe that there's some sort of code coming over in the next couple of weeks and months that is going to help clear out your others folder, and that one which we talked about on the previous podcast. So there were a sort of, oh, but in terms of the built-in applications, in terms of things like Nokia Maps, for example, in terms of the extra applications like Photosynth, there were no obvious gaps.
Yeah, I think this is interesting. It's one of the strengths of Windows Phone that you don't really notice when you're using the device. It's only when you sort of sit there and think about it afterwards, or you go away and use a kind of a mid or a low-end Android device and go, oh, I can't do that. I'm kind of used to being able to do that with an Android device. And interesting, Ewan has come up with the one that even if you'd had the space, I'm not sure you'd have been able to install the games, because a couple of these games have requirements for a gigabyte of RAM and the 620, and the kind of the lower specification devices need have 512 megabytes of RAM. There's actually only, to my knowledge, there's only about 5 or 6 games which that applies to, so it's a much smaller grouping than we had with the kind of the Tango handsets with Windows Phone 7.5 and the 256 512 separation of RAM there. But it's interesting that space is actually becoming an issue for these high profile kind of near console quality titles, because, as you say, you know, there may be a gigabyte to download and then need, you know, 4 gigabytes in order to kind of be decompressed and then installed and tidied up afterwards. Aside from anything, it takes a while to download them, even on a reasonably fast connection. So it certainly has to be over Wi-Fi. You know, you'll be forced to do that by the Windows Phone Store. But I do think it's interesting on a device that, you know, at £130, well, you can almost buy 4 of those for the cost of a 920. You're getting an experience that's very, very similar. Of course, there are cuts in the hardware. And I'm kind of curious, you've already mentioned the camera, Ewan. Were there other bits of the hardware that you particularly noticed as not being that great, you know, when compared to kind of a higher end device, or were they kind of in your, was that offset by the pricing kind of in your mind, I know this is mid-tier, so actually that's okay?
I think the latter there, offset, because you know it's a cheaper handset, the colours on the screen were slightly washed out. They weren't as vibrant as I've seen on, say, the 820 or even Nokia C6 back on the Symbian. But again, as you said, in my head, it's like, well, it's a slightly cheaper screen. It's still RGB. It's still 800 by 480, 3.8 inches. And, you know, when you put handsets next to each other, especially when you've got colourful games that are going on, there is a slight difference that was noticeable. But really, only for me, because I keep switching between the handsets. If the 620 is the day-to-day all the time, you tend to not notice it is washed out. Your brain sort of adds the HDR compensation itself. Because brains are wonderful like that, aren't they? So that was really the only thing. And in terms of, I know people have talked about this sort of double shot styling of the case and the colors and everything. Can I just say I really enjoyed the color. I'm glad I had a yellow one. It just felt different and nice, and not another random black slab with the word Sony at the top.
Yeah, well, I've been using a 620 as well, and I'd say my favorite thing about it, it is partly the colors, and the double shot thing in particular is quite eye-catching, but just the shape of that back shell, and actually it's the removable case that has all the shaping, it fits into the hand really comfortably, more so than I would say some of the higher end devices. And it's partly because it's a smaller device and I've got quite small hands, so you know, I really like that about the 620. But you know, all the reason we've been talking about here, it's actually for me why the 620 is probably the best value Windows phone device, you know, you can buy, because you're getting, you know, an awful lot of kind of value for money in this. You know, I talked about the pricing, you know, being a third of the cost of the 920. You're certainly getting a lot more than a third of the functionality. I would say you're getting, you know, 95% of it. You know, the games is the one thing we talked about. And yes, you know, the hardware is a step down, but I think Euron's right. You don't notice it too much when you're comparing it, you know, to devices in that category. You do notice it side by side with the 920. Of course you're going to. But actually, I think if you compare it with a similarly, you know, priced Android device, you'll come away pleasantly surprised. I mean, there aren't a great deal of difference, but I'd actually say, and I've said it before, I feel Windows Phone has more of an advantage in the mid-tier, whereas at the top end, things are very close, and I can see perfectly reasonable arguments, you know, why I'd say that Windows Phone's the best, or why Android, or why iOS is each, you know, it's going to depend on the person. In the mid-tier, you know, I think Windows Phone is better suited in some ways to that particular area, and particularly with some of the handsets we've seen from Nokia, and the same is true of the 520 and the 720. So it's going to be one that's worth watching. So I guess the final acid test, Euron, is, you know, would you pick up a 620 and use it again?
Yes.
There we go. Okay, so...
Sorry, were you expecting something a little bit more there?
Well, I was expecting a little bit more than that. If it'd been me answering it, we'd have got, you know, 5 minutes on that. Enough of me for now. We did promise on the previous podcast we'd talk a little bit about MWC. We haven't quite got round to that this time.
It's easy. Rafe, did you enjoy MWC?
I did.
There we go. We've honoured our promise. We'll talk more about MWC in the next podcast.
We'll talk about some of the Nokia apps, Glammy, but also about some of the wider industry trends, which I think will be of interest to people. But we're coming up against our time limit, so it's time for App of the Week, Euron. And I'm willing to bet you've got something from South by Southwest, and you're going to cheat and use something built in, aren't you?
I am, yes. I'm going to use the one true push delivery mechanism that I knew would work, that would talk to all my friends and colleagues at South by Southwest, that would be cross-platform, that would work at a minimal cost without eating into my data bandwidth. I am, of course, talking about
Skype.
Text messaging. Write down none of the fancy solutions, none of the interesting stuff, good old-fashioned SMS.
But that costs £1,000 a megabyte.
Or you could just go to your AT&T and do the $25 for the monthly plan, which gives you unlimited texting.
Ah, okay.
Now, this is where it gets interesting, because you can switch Twitter to using texting. So all my DMs and app messages came to me by a text message, which is what Twitter was originally designed to do. I can reply by sending my Twitter message to their SMS service. Again, it's what it was originally designed to do. Groups and set up in the People Hub of people that I knew at South by Southwest. I didn't need to care whether they had WhatsApp installed or Skype installed, or if they were in connection, or if I was pinging to their computer that was in their hotel while they were away at the bar. I was sending a text text directly to their phone, and it got through, and I knew they would receive it, and I knew they would be able to read it, and I knew that they would be able to reply to me whenever they wanted. It's not completely instantaneous. So you could have latency up to about a minute or so. But you know, to be perfectly honest, when you're going out and you want to stay in touch at an event like South By, you can't pick up the phone and listen to people because you're in a crowded music environment. You can't trust that you're always going to have data connections because you're talking to people from all around the world who have descended on Alston. And even then, you know, are people going to remember to pick up and have a look and go into the application, see the alert? There's just something rather aggressive about text messaging when it arrives on a handset that people will look at it. So it was the perfect medium for the 2 weeks in South By for staying in touch over that wide area.
There we go. An app of the week, and we've gone for text messaging on our really modern smartphone. I will try and rescue things.
Because
it works. Yes, I'll try and rescue things a little bit. I want to talk about two app updates rather than new apps, one of which is an update for the Skype preview on the Windows Phone 8 handsets. This added support for HD video calling, or actually it was really improved stability and performance. I found it much more reliable. I've been able to have Skype calls come into the handset without any problem before. It wasn't always picking up on them as well. So well worth downloading that particular update. The increased quality of the video calling, that's nice as well. I also like the fact there's now landscape support in the calling screen as well, and I'm finding that very useful as kind of an additional way to keep in contact with family, especially when everybody's on the road. The other app update I wanted to mention was Endomondo. It's one of these sports tracking applications, probably one of the better known ones. And the reason I want to mention this update is it recently got updated with support for background GPS. Now, this was something that was introduced in Windows Phone 8, a new API that allows apps to continue monitoring the GPS or the location, even if they're not running in the foreground. And obviously, that happens quite a lot when you're doing the sports tracking type activity. You know, you either want to take a photo, change the music, you know, you've got an incoming call or something like that. And it used to be that, you know, you'd lose track of the location and the app would get upset. And, you know, some of them were very good. If you switch back to the app, it would kind of restore everything and get your location. But now this works perfectly, and so it's kind of a really nice update to have. And actually, it now means these sports tracking apps, or this particular one at least, and I think quite a few will be getting this update in due course, you know, works properly. You know, you can record your location. So if that's, you know, you're doing jogging, walking, whatever it is, exercise activity, it will kind of record where you've been, and obviously that's more accurate data when you're uploading it to the services, comparing with friends, or just want to track it for your own personal usage. So both of those are very worthy downloads, so that's why they're my app picks for this week.
There we go, and you can fill them in. And if you really want to, Foursquare was kind of useful at South By as well, but now it's not. Foursquare really works very well for me once a week out of the year when all the geeks are in that concentrated environment. Very interesting that once all the geeks had left and it was just South By Southwest music, Foursquare became just a dead icon that wasn't doing anything. So given that you had them too, I'll mention two there as well, but one of them only for 1 week.
Fair. Okay, there we go. Well, we're back on track now with the All About Windows Phone podcast. We should be able to have another one in just over a week's time, so don't forget to tune in and listen to that. You can catch up with all the news and views on allaboutwindowsphone.com. Of course, don't forget to download our app. Just search for AAWP in the Windows Phone store. And if you've got any feedback, please let us know. You can reach us on Facebook, Twitter, via email. That's rafe@allaboutwindowsphone.com. Or indeed, leave a comment on the podcast story on the site. So please, we always welcome getting feedback. And thank you very much for listening.
Indeed, thank you. We shall catch you in the next show. Ta-ra for now.